You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. To the house of All Marine Radio here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good morning so far. The, let's see. Stock market losing its mind this morning, as it does on occasion. So you got that going for you. Yeah. Yeah, so the stock market. Now remember my advice. Buy quality on weakness. Well, what's the right time to get in, Matt? Don't worry about that. It's called dollar cost averaging. The fundamental strength of the economy is there, right? People hit the panic button because of the whole coronavirus thing. Don't try to time it. Don't try to get it at the low point. Buy a little bit here and there. You'll drive your average cost down. That's right, dollar cost averaging. But, Mac, everybody's selling. Exactly. Remember in It's a Wonderful Life, what Mr. Potter does? How he comes to own the whole city? And George rails on everybody? Don't you understand what Potter's doing? We're panicking, and he's buying. He's going to own this whole town pretty soon. And he did. Why? Because when everybody's selling, he's doing the opposite. And so it goes. Welcome to the world of big finance. Yeah, so on a Monday morning, yeah, the stock market's halted, in the last hour, a couple different times. As, you know, there's mandatory triggers now because all the computerized trading and whatnot. Yeah, that stuff takes over the market. And so there's brakes put in place now. So those things are in motion this morning. So anyway, the world that we live in on a Monday. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing. And again, I'm not the biggest Donald Trump fan, but I have a thing about the truth. And to me, you know, people should get blamed and accept the blame and responsibility for the things that they should be blamed for. But honestly, man, the stuff that you see, and I'll tell you what, I have, like, I go to news aggregators, right? So go to different websites that aggregate news. And so you can, you know, in pretty short order, you see what news is trending to make sure you're talking about stuff that's, you know, the world's you're looking at. When you look at the news, and because that's one of the keys to doing this job, it's just part of. And it's actually when I used to go on active duty, it was the thing that would provide me the most relief. I didn't have to do that anymore. All I had to do was my job. I did not have to know what was going on in the world. And believe it or not, it was like a great relief that I didn't have to look at the news. I didn't have to, you know, find guests that were topical. I didn't have to do any of that. And it was funny because I would notice that in my life, like, oh my God, I don't have to find that guy today. I don't even have to look at what's going on in the news. I can read what I want. So, but anyway, you look at news aggregators, and one of them, a conservative one, is the Drudge Report, right? Good God, you look at all the headlines on that thing, and you just want to say, you know what? Time to move to the desert. Can't do it anymore. Can't do it anymore. It's just too much doom and gloom. And then the thing about accepting responsibility that, you know, if you didn't know better and you started reading the news, you would have thought that this whole thing is the responsibility of the president of the United States. Yeah, if I was just perusing the news, I'm like, oh, Trump really screwed this one up, didn't he? And so we can't even report news anymore without except through the prism either that you like Donald Trump or your news organization hates Donald Trump. We can't even do the news anymore, right? And so when you look at the response to this, right, the response is, you know, there's all kinds of people with a hand in this. And you would think it's the executive orders of the President of the United States that, you know, are he's the only guy that has a vote in this. So anyhow, to me, you know, blame people for what they should be blamed for. But for God's sakes, you know, to the news media, grow the fuck up, for God's sakes. This issue is an important issue. And Alex Holling is going to join us, I think. And, you know, we talk about, you know, bikini pictures and stuff like that as a way to pad your numbers, right? And that it's a requirement for websites to do that kind of stuff because it drives traffic. And so to me, there's a sensational aspect about the coronavirus thing that is characteristic of our media and how shit they are. Yeah. Whoa, Mac. No, but it pisses me off. And this is when you see them at their worst. You know, this is supposed to be about the truth, about informing the public, right? So that the public can make important, informed decisions. That's what the news does. And without people who report, right, then it makes a democracy, right, much more difficult. So every story, you know, that you read, you know, I'm overstating that obviously, but I just wish that they could report the news without this constant overlayer of that it's somehow or other the fault of the President of the United States. So anyway, he's in Florida. Shaking hands, by the way. Yeah. You could imagine he supposedly is a germaphobe, right? So you can imagine what a big deal that is for him. All right, we're going to get out. We're going to go to the, you know, the line of people over there. And we're going to shake hands. You know, for a germaphobe, right? That's probably like, oh my God. But it's the example, right? It's the example that, that you know, the President of the United States sets. What does he do? How does he act? You know, blah, 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 blah. So anyhow. Good morning to you on a Monday morning. I've been watching Malcolm Gladwell. For those of you who know him, he's a pretty interesting guy. I had the same reaction to him as I had to a general. I shouldn't say his name, but I will because that's the kind of guy that I am. His name was Claude Tudor, and so I get this email from a guy named Claude Tudor who's, you know, who's doing work for the Air Force relative to suicide and destructive behavior. And so we're talking about post-traumatic winning, and I'm like, oh, my God, Claude Tudor, right? And this is, you know, this speaks poorly of me as a human being, I know, but whatever. I'm like, so he's an Air Force dude. His name's Claude Tudor. You know, this conversation, it's probably Claude Tudor the Fourth too, right, with that lame-ass name. So this conversation's so going to go. I'm going to get the token pat on the head. Okay, well, thanks for reaching out to us. See you later. And within about, like, 7 minutes, I stopped the conversation. And I said, hey, I just got to tell you that this conversation is not going the way I thought. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, man, I saw the name Claude Tudor, man. I thought you were going to be pegging the dork meter. And you're not. And I'm just sitting here laughing. My own, you know, prejudice against your name. He started laughing. So anyway, I had the same kind of, you know, I have friends like Tim Lynch is a huge Malcolm Gladwell guy. But I've never really looked at his work. And so I started to, I had the same, he's a runner. So he's a slender guy. He's mixed race guy. So he's got kind of a big mop of curly hair and, you know, wears the, kind of circular, you know, framed glasses. And I thought, I'm not going to listen to this dude for very long. And I'll tell you what, I'm a huge fan. He's got a great sense of humor. And he writes stuff that appeals to me in that it's fact-based, okay? And what he does is he looks at something and he doesn't accept the footnotes, right? He doesn't accept the footnotes, and so he researches. He's a dork, right? And then he'll link, you know, something that you don't think is related, and he'll show you the relationship. Pretty interesting. You know, he's written books, How to Talk to Strangers, Tipping Point, Blank. But I've mostly just watched him on YouTube. And he did this thing about writing, and I want to share it with you. Okay, because Tim Lynch is going to come on here in a little bit. We're going to talk about writing. So here, let me just, this occupied my time a little bit over the weekend, thinking about this, all right? And this is Malcolm Gladwell talking about writing.
So the job of the writer is not to supply the ideas, it is to be patient enough to find the ideas. David and Goliath is a concept we all know, an arrogant big dude who thinks he's fighting a sword fight, and David changed the rules. But then I stumbled across this paper that had been written by an Israeli endocrinologist who had suggested Goliath has this really rare medical condition which causes you to lose your eyesight. Why do giants lose? Because they can't see. They're so big and strong and powerful. They lose the ability to kind of properly appreciate the world around them. It's not just a story about David's courage and greatness. It's a story about Goliath's blindness. You can find gold in the smallest of details if you're willing to be patient. We're going to talk about suspense, structure, research, humility, characters, puzzles, and semicolons. One of the mistakes I think writers make is they spend a lot of time thinking about how to start their stories and not a lot of time thinking about how to end them. Knowing my ending makes the beginning super easy, right? It's totally clear what I have to do and totally clear what I shouldn't do. Your first goal is to be clear and simple, to write at an eighth grade level, but with ideas that are super sophisticated. all good nonfiction writing is about. Going out and finding someone else and inhabiting their world and representing it to readers. It is giving us a window into other people's hearts and souls and minds. I'm Malcolm Gladwell, and this is my masterclass.
So, yeah, he does an online class. And, you know, and the other one that I saw was that he did is about is the hard, like what he says, the hardest thing is to start. But if you understand the conclusion. So then I thought, well, what's the conclusion of post-traumatic winning? Right. What's the conclusion? If you know it's in the last chapter, then the first chapter is easy to write. So then I said to myself, okay, so what's post-traumatic winning? What's the conclusion? And the conclusion is we can solve this. We as veterans can heal ourselves if you understand the truth, and then if you'll give. Which, and we're prone to service, so all that makes sense in our world, right? And then additionally, we can then become a role model for other organizations like us, first responders, okay? And then we can reach outside our ecosystem because they're tangentially related to us, right? But we can reach outside our ecosystem. And we can touch the lives of so many people who struggle around the country. That's the conclusion of post-traumatic winning, right? We can solve our own problems if we'll face the truth, and then we'll take that truth and we'll give it to other people. That is what heals. Transformation heals. Endurance sucks, right? And the VA and the DOD, they're merchants of endurance. Okay, not transformation. So, not attempting to be, you know. Well, I guess that is an editorial comment, but I've enjoyed. Like, I spent all weekend with Gladwell as I went about my chores and lived my life. And the other thing I like about him is what I like about my friends. Since I was a captain, right? And at the basic school and the infantry officer course, we argue. And you hear it today on All Marine Radio. What you hear in the Lynch Kenny thing is what my friends and I have done. And I told you, if we included like General Furness and General Kennedy, which they, well, Kennedy could. Furness is still on active duty, so he could not participate. Because he would have to restrain himself too much, and that's not what this not when we interact intellectually, it goes from really really smart to really stupid really quick, and then back to really smart. But they're all thinkers and they're all writers, and it's been one of the best parts of my life. It's been one of the best parts of my life, and so I'm a huge fan of it. And Gladwell very much, you know, he loves sports, which is from looking at him, I didn't think he would. He's actually a funny guy, and so and he actually quoted Kanye West as I do. So anyway, but his quote is legit. He actually recites a lyric from a Kanye West song, and I simply attribute my work, a quote to Kanye West, which is a total lie. So anyway, but I found that humorous too. So Tim Lynch is going to come on in about 15 minutes, and we're going to talk about writing post-traumatic winning. And that's all I told him. I said, hey, come on, we'll talk about it. And so I honestly, I didn't know how I would feel about, you know, Timmy's a good writer. And I've dictated, right, and asking Tim to help me write it. But I think it's probably a good thing. I think it's probably a good thing. In that, one of the things I heard in Gladwell say was he was interviewing somebody, and he was interviewing the guy who wrote The Blind Side. What he's written other things, I can't remember his name, Michael something, and the guy said, well, the first thing I had to do is get over, right? Get over writing a perfect book. That's the first thing I had to get over. And once I got over that, then, you know, I was capable of functioning. And it made me laugh, right? It made me laugh because I thought that's what I try to do. So anyway, so we'll talk about that. I want to play for you, though, a little bit of audio from a few minutes ago about, you know, my affinity for Charles Payne, right? He is a he's a business guy on Fox, and so I want to play for you This is just something that got done here a few minutes ago. So here's, I'm going to have to skip around too, so bear with me.
April 30th, we could ring your doorbell.
Yeah.
Real people really do win.
The future of our country is hanging in the balance.
Ago, the president will be deplaning shortly on his way to...
So this is Charles Payne. There's a couple things going on in the market, right? Coronavirus sell-off. And the Russians... The Russians and the Saudis are in a huge fight over oil.
Just to bring everybody, maybe somebody's just tuning in now. Right. The markets opened just over an hour ago, and overnight there was this quadruple point sell-off. Investors were spooked by coronavirus fears. They were spooked by what was happening to oil markets, oil selling off more than 30% because of these production woes. And then there was a trading halt, meaning the S&P 500 sold off more than 7%. A circuit breaker was triggered. Everybody took a deep breath for a few minutes, 15 minutes. Traders came back, and then we came off the lows of the session.
We came off the lows, and it's a sort of a wait-and-see game. But to your point, also the market was halted even before the trading, you know, and that pre-trading of 5%
limit down.
And it all came really a confluence of things, right? Obviously, the spread here, more states of emergency, the anxiety that's gone along with that, the unknowns of this sort of social distancing, you know, just what the impact will be. In addition to that, you mentioned the oil war, which is really kind of nuts with the Saudi Arabia and Russia. All week last week, Saudi Arabia and OPEC was trying to get Russia to cut production. Russia was kind of iffy about it. So Saudi Arabia does a complete about face, and they hike their production. Remember, oil is a commodity. You know better than anyone else.
Now, let me just explain this to you, okay? This is Saudi Arabia saying "fuck you" to Russia, okay? Oh, really? You think you're going to play hardball with us? All right. If you want to do this, and the Saudis do this, and that, but right, they just yoked up three members of the Saudi royal family, right? Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, right? That dude. He's not the most stable weapons platform, okay? And I hope the King of Saudi Arabia makes that dude go away at some point, because he's not good for the planet. But anyway, this is him telling the Russians, hey, fuck you.
About supply and demand, and there's just so much supply out there, and it's going to be more supply out there. We are awash in crude oil. The irony, of course, is anyone watching this is like, well, does that mean my gas prices are going to go down? The answer is yes. Now, the bigger question now for American economists in the stock market is, are you going to take advantage of it and go somewhere?
Yeah, they're below $2 a gallon in some parts of the country already as a result.
Absolutely. So, and listen, I think the market is oversold, but it is in a dark period where it does not know how to adjust. And 1 year in a period like that, selling begets selling, and that's where we are.
The market does not like uncertainty.
It hates uncertainty. In this case, the uncertainty, which is also which fuels itself. In other words, the more people that wear masks, see other people wearing masks, may wear masks. Other people, right?
Fear, yeah.
And it's really reverberating in a way and it's so amazing because we were just this economy, everything was a juggernaut. Yeah. We saw that Friday, but I don't think necessarily we have to go.
And it still is, by the way. All those underlying conditions are still there. All right. So this is Mac the Economist. Yes. I have credentials.
Like, you know, some people are saying, well, you look at bond yields, you look at the oil. I don't think that necessarily means we have to go into recession.
Okay. There's a reason for all of this stuff. We've got the president walking off Air Force One right now, John, landing just moments ago in Orlando.
Yeah, he is about to climb into the beast. We are wondering if the president might say a few words.
Now, they go back and forth whether the president is going to say something, but I just want to get to the end of Charles Payne's comments here.
To sort of calm these markets, it doesn't appear that he's going to do that today. Well, no.
Points. We were interested to see if perhaps he would comment on that market sell-off and the coordination over the coronavirus.
I think the comment that the president made by getting off the plane instead of going straight to the limo and leaving by going over and shaking people's hands, that's not an insignificant comment for a germaphobe, right? That is an award for courage right there.
Charles?
The markets right now and for the, even last week, there's been this anticipation of intervention. Both by central banks and by, of course, federal governments, including ours. There have been some ideas that have been tossed out there. I think this week, though, you're going to have to see some sort of concrete action. I know there are going to be some economic purists out there who think we should just ride it out. Again, though, there's an intangible, the psychological aspect of this that the White House is going to have to consider. Also, in an election year, do you want people who don't have certain insurances not to be able to take time off from work? I mean, there's a lot of considerations here for President Trump, without a doubt. So we are going to get something from the White House. It's unclear to how what it will be, but there will be initial steps for them to help buttress the economic impact for the lower, particularly in those hard hit areas, small businesses and things like that.
But there won't be comments from the president, not right now. He just claimed.
All right. So you have this sell-off triggered by a lot of times it's irrational behavior, because if you sit down with economists and you say, so bottom line, underlying economy is, and they say, oh, it's robust, it's strong. Okay, so the nature of the sell-off, people panicking, right? They're watching the news, and they're doing this, they're doing that, and they call up their brokers and say, get me out of that stuff. All right, get me back into something safer, and you can go to the markets and look at what financial instruments people are moving to, some to cash, right, some to bonds, right? So it's this flight to things that stay liquid, gold is one of them, and flight to safety, which is T-bonds, staying in a liquid state and things like that till the market corrects itself. So, but there are those who would give you advice, if you're a financial person, to go ahead and don't touch that dial, man. Dollar cost average by quality on weakness, because as soon as this thing, and it will pass. In fact, the president tweeted out a little bit ago, and I mentioned this last week, the number of people that that are killed so far by influenza. But I mean, all you see, 24 hours a day is the hysteria of this disease. And so anyway, and then you see some really interesting articles like, well, I got coronavirus and let me tell you about it. Right. And you'll see something like that. Now those are the ones I tend to gravitate towards. So anyway, but nonstop coronavirus. NBA said they have a plan to play games without fans there. And LeBron James says, yeah, I ain't doing that. The NHL has stopped reporters from coming in their locker room. They'll bring their players into media rooms where they will be separated from the media. And so you can imagine one person in a locker room, right, who gets this impacts the whole league. Then does the whole team have to be, quarantined, which means every game they're supposed to play is forfeited, right, which means all the revenue associated with that game, the tickets, other than your season tickets, that's all that goes away. So you can see, problematic. Same thing as baseball gets ready to go. How do you How do you semi-quarantine your players, right? And same thing with the military around the world. How do you do this? How do you do this? So I should probably begin the program. And we're going to talk to Tim Lynch about book writing here, because I went to see Yale and Michigan play lacrosse about three blocks from my house at Orange Coast College. Napa man sends me a text like 2 minutes before it's going to start. Mac, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm watching Malcolm Gladwell here at my house. What are you doing? I'm like right near you. Like, you want to come over and watch, you know, Yale and Michigan play lacrosse? I'm like, am I a man or what? So I went over there and had a good time with Napa man. And he had a buddy. And his buddy starts calling me Hank. Right? His buddy's leaving. And he looks at me and goes, Hank, right? And I said, yep. And he's like, hey, Hank, it's nice meeting you. And Napa man stand there looking at me like, why? Why? I'm like, I'm Hank, man. Don't worry about it. It's all right. I could be Hank. Oh, my God. But it was good. Yale rated fifth in the country. Lacrosse season just started. Michigan unranked, not in the top 20. And the Yaleys won. And pretty good. Lacrosse is a good game, man. It's physical. It's physical, which is, I think, good for boys. And, man, they cut that thing loose. And the goalies don't wear a lot of equipment either. And, you know, yeah, they can fling that. And that ball is, it's a hardened rubber ball, right? It's not the ball that, you know, when we used to play as kids. Yeah, it ain't that. Yeah. I don't know what vulcanized rubber is, but this thing sounds like it. So if you ever feel it, it's hard and it bounces. So no, and lacrosse is a fun game to watch too. So went and did that. But let me begin the program. You're not with the United States Marine Corps Band. Good morning to you. This is it's dedicated to everybody out there who's a little bit nervous about coronavirus. Don't hit the panic button. There's some prudent things that you can do, probably some situations you should avoid, but I would say, by and large, live your life. Read about it. If you're elderly and you're having health issues, you should probably spend more time at home. And so get smart about it. And there's certain activities maybe you want to minimize. But the whole panic thing, we've been through stuff like this before, and it's tended to turn out okay in spite of the hysterical nature of our media. So my constant advice, don't listen to them. All right. Find smart people, read what they have to say, do those things, and live your life.
Our flag comes to every You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather here on a Monday morning. Sunny and 57 in Quantico. Sunny and 63 at Camp Lejeune. Sunny and 50. A little bit cooler in 29 Palms. California gets supposed to get one of the biggest rainstorms of the spring in the next couple days. But today's supposed to be upper 60s. Currently, partly sunny and 50 at Camp Pendleton. Dark, cloudy and 65 at Camp Smith. Okinawa warming up. Dark, cloudy and 74 in the Ryukyu Island chain. Yeah, look it up. All right. Cloudy late in the day in the Helmand Province now that we're on daylight savings time, right? And 55 degrees in Lash Gargah and in Ramadi. Early in the evening, dark, clear, and 72 degrees in the Alambar Province. So, got that going for him. Currently, it's partly cloudy and 56 degrees. Looking for a high of 71 today, according to weather.com. 67 with rain tomorrow. 68 with rain on Wednesday. And then getting back to normal on, I think, Thursday's a transition day. Friday's a Sunday. Shithole weather, which I have not been very good at lately, so accept my apologies from Chris. Shithole weather is in a spring sprung slowdown. Currently in Webster, clear blue skies, 64 fucking degrees, is what he wrote. It'll hit 70 in some places of Massachusetts today. Are you shitting me? Question mark. Winds out of the southwest at 8 to 12. More of this all week. Chris from Webster out. And then they're going to get like 4 inches of snow next week, right? From Saskatchewan. Hi, Mac. This was an impressive Twitter live broadcast of the commissioning of the USS Herschel Woody Williams. How wonderful to see a still vibrant Woody at age 96. Any chance of you having him on again? Yeah, you know what? I will contact him. But he has a foundation that goes around the country and puts up monuments to Gold Star families. And so we'll get him on to talk about that. And then, I mean, you can imagine the 75th anniversary, the ship commissioning. I mean, he's been all over the place. If you track him on Twitter, Woody. And let me tell you, he's from West Virginia, and he's the most down-to-earth, you know, guy you'll ever meet. And so very, very cool stuff that he does with his foundation. From Nancy, it's sunny, bright, and chilly today in western Pennsylvania, right? 55 degrees on the way to 61. Winds are out of the southwest at 10 to 17. And a beautiful picture of Pleasantville. And from Vacaville, there's a picture of a Corona girl. a Corona beer girl, right? So anyway, I appreciate that. Good morning, Mac. Today's weather in beautiful Vacaville is currently 48, cloudy, with winds 6 to 9 out of the northeast, expected 67 degrees. Joining me now from from Texas is Tim Lynch. Timmy, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Mac. How are you?
I'm good. You're a big Malcolm Gladwell fan, and I not so much. And you and I were talking about him last week, and so I started watching. And my initial response was to judge him by his slight frame, his hair, and his glasses. And then what I found out was, like, we could have hung out with Malcolm Gladwell because he's about footnotes, he's about picking scabs, he's got a decent sense of humor, and he likes sports. So I was turned around, and I sent Tim a link to a writing class he does, but not so much about the writing class, but it was something that he says. It's like, okay, once you know the conclusion of the book, how to start it is easy. So I wanted to have Tim on to talk about book writing and writing in general. So anyway, because Tim's helping me write the post-traumatic winning book, whatever that becomes. So first of all, you're a Gladwell fan, yes?
Yeah, I am. I am. I actually didn't read him first. I started listening to him on book tapes when I was on recruiting duty because they were long and interesting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, he's a meticulous researcher.
Oh yeah, and he seems to have a knack for finding things, for framing something, be it policing, be it counterintelligence work, be it boxing, framing something in a way that as soon as you see it, you're like, damn, that makes sense. But you don't see it until he says it. You know, it's unique. You did the same thing with the decision making class. You got a little Malcolm like traits. I don't think that they're evident in me, but I'm very impressed by guys who think like he does because it's not normal.
He goes down holes and, you know, he picks scabs and then he finds these stories. And truth be told, you know, he still does this. He will spend a couple days wandering around the library, things that we used to do as kids, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I'll go look for one book, but then I kind of broaden my lens in the section and I find these pieces of gold. And it's amazing some of the stories that he tells. Then he's like, I won't say he deep dives. He like ultra deep dives. Like he puts on the diver suit and gets in the submersible, and he goes, mm-hmm. and then he links that with. It reminds me kind of a little bit about Seinfeld. Like Seinfeld normally starts out on two tracks. There's two different storylines that you don't see how they can collide at the beginning of the story, and then about two thirds of the way through, boom, they collide. and
the old thing they said about Seinfeld, it was a show about nothing, and that wasn't true. That was some superb writing in that show that for exactly what you just pointed out.
Right, but it would always be, you know, like Kramer, right? He's constructing a set, and he's going to have a talk show in his house, and then the guy across the street has this sign, and they love eating his chicken, and you know, and then it's like, okay, and so these things progress. And Gladwell does kind of things like that where he's talking about, you know, whether it's in The Tipping Point or Blink or, and I haven't read those. I mean, I'm listening to The Tipping Point on audiobooks. But what I've done is I've watched, I don't know, I spent most of the weekend listening and watching to him interview people or be interviewed. And he's a fascinating guy. Fascinating guy. And so.
And more importantly, he can write clearly and coherently, and that is not, in my opinion, an easy skill to master. I have been writing for a long time, and I don't think I'm a very effective writer. It takes me 10-15 times to go through something to make it sound remotely as erudite as his books, because those things just read well, and they're not using fancy language necessarily. Like he said, he writes at the eighth grade level. I think it's a little above that. But damn, he can get you into a story and keep you there for a long time. And that's hard to do.
Yeah, he credits his mother for that. His mother was, I think his mother wrote one book. Mm-hmm. But he talked about her writing style and that he copied it. and that he works hard at it to be he works hard at that craft of, you know, of writing at an eighth grade style. But what his passion is these days is podcasting.
And I know, and I've got to start listening to those because I'm starting to have too many podcasts to listen to. But and I imagine he's interesting. I like listening to Joe Rogan's when he has somebody on who's interesting to me, because the guy's a natural at doing that long form interview, but he can't write. You know, I've got to listen to these Gladwell podcasts, because the guy has yet to find something that fascinates him that doesn't in turn fascinate me.
Well, and it was interesting to hear him talk about it. You know, well, why are you interested in podcasting? And, he said, well, things come alive, right, with the human voice. There are things that you can do and things that jump through your headset, you know, with the power of the human voice, the intonation. He said, and you can't touch that in a book, no matter how well you write. And he said, that's the thing that struck me. Is that it was more powerful. It's more powerful. He said the other thing that I like about it is that, you know, when you write a book, you have all these wonks, you know, that, you know, have an opinion about it. He said, you know, podcasting is like the open West. He said it's uncharted. It's unmavericked. It's un this. It's un that. And he said, and I like that about it. I like that about it. So anyway,
I was listening to one of the earliest podcasters. He's an actor in Hollywood. We used to have a construction business. Conservative guy, comedian. I can't remember his name. He's been on Rogan, which is where I heard him. And he said, well, you know, my advice for podcasters, and he had started before Rogan, which was a long time ago. He said the first advice, be famous already, which is interesting, because the podcast space is enormous now. There's right. Everybody in the world's doing podcasting,
right.
And only a few people have been doing it to the point where they get consistent loyal audiences and a sustainable thing. And I think that's the magic of your show. You're pretty damn good at getting interesting people on and eliciting interesting stories. And my hat's off to you, brother, because that's a podcaster making your living that way. You know, you're probably about in the top 100 as far as that goes.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I did broadcast.
It's not easy, man.
I did broadcasting, and Gladwell has the advantage of fame, right? So
yeah.
and what they do is I do essentially my radio show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I make it interesting and I turn it into a podcast. What they do is they do podcasts. They, you know, so when Gladwell's credits run, which he recites, you know, this is the producer, this is the engineer, this is the fact checker, and I'm like, like for me, that's a pretty easy list, right? Yeah. Yo, Mike McNamara is the fact checker, right? Michael Francis McNamara is the producer, and Mac McNamara, he is the you've been listening to Mac. Right. And so, right. So minor. So, but it's, and they might do like in, I don't know, like a season, right. He might do a dozen episodes as opposed to doing something every day, which is also, so mine is a radio show that I turn into a podcast.
Right. I got that.
Right. Yeah.
I
mean, if that makes sense. And cause I had somebody say that to me, who met me, they're like, you know, your podcast sounds like a radio show. I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. I said, I do it every day. And so, and he was like, oh, well now it makes sense, because you know, when you have these guys who do quote unquote podcasting, what they do is, they produce this thing, right?
Right?
And it's, you know, it's got the music and it's got, you know, the transitions and the audio slides in, and it's very, you know, it's very smooth. You know, my stuff is not that way, which I like. I like it being more spontaneous. I like it being you know, the power of what comes out of somebody's mouth when it's not produced.
Yeah. No, I've been on several podcasts, basically because of the blog and my time in Afghanistan. So when Military for Hire, I think it was Reuters or some other big organization started a military-themed podcast, it, particularly if they focus on contractors, invariably my name's going to come up. And on those podcasts, which were ultra-produced, and I would be talking to the host for 2.5 hours for a 45-minute cut podcast, and I know the one they did on my interview, I thought it just sucked. It was just too overproduced.
Right.
And so not many of the podcasts that I've been on over the years are still podcasting.
Oh, really?
And no, that Reuters one, that thing folded in 4 months. They was awful. They I thought I was telling them interesting things, but they cut that all out. And I guess they just could not allow for, in their editing process, somebody going on a rant. But I was very disappointed with that kind of stuff. And I've been to several others I've been on. All of them are gone.
Let's talk about the post-traumatic winning book. With the thing I sent you, Gladwell talks about once you know the ending, it's easy to write the start.
That's right.
And so I sat down and I thought, okay, well, what's the ending? And the ending that I wrote is we can solve the destructive behavior epidemic in the DOD. That's to me the ending. That is the takeaway. That is the conclusion of post-traumatic winning, that we can. And then there's sub takeaways from that, and they are this. We can then offer it to first responders because they are tangentially related to our community because we go through many of the same things. And beyond that, we can offer it to every university, high school, and community around the world. And mm-hmm. and so in that way, our life of service continues, right? And we continue the transformation that post-traumatic winning believes in and starts, and we say there's a better path than endurance out there. And so anyway, so that's the long.
100% behind that.
Right, that's the long. So in watching that, he made me kind of think about that and make, you know, so if somebody walked up to me and said, what's the point of this book, right? To get you to understand that we can solve this problem.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It when you know where you're going, it does make it easier. Now with what you sent me, I was able to quickly start and jam out three chapters, just reorganizing stuff in a way I thought flowed. We'll have to obviously talk about it, but here's why I think that's
when you're writing something, you struggle with, well, should I give this to somebody else? Should I, you know, I let them, you know, this is my baby and all the rest of that stuff that if you're a writer that you feel. And so, but I think that for me, I mean, you know, letting somebody else, you know, take the lead in writing it is a good thing, right? And it forces me to look through a little bit different lens, which is the lens that they'll look through and then have to consider that. And so it's, you know, so letting go of a child is not easy, but it's been kind of an interesting weekend thinking about it.
No, it's not going to be – It isn't easy, and although I've been with you every step of the way, in that I was listening. I mean, since you started, I was on one of your. I think I was one of your earlier guests, but I've always listened. And when you came up with this concept, I instantly saw that. Yeah, every one of those guys he's interviewed, they're in the same spot. Some of them took a hell of a long time to get there, and so. I think that it's easier for me as opposed to somebody who's not intimately familiar with this whole story to bang it out. But I'm going to go down and interpret things ways that clearly are not going to be the way that you see them. So this is going to be painful. But I think at the end we can come up with a good product. And most importantly, I think we need to because that's a task that needs to get done.
got it. No. Yeah. And it is. And so, so people know, I mean, if you've never heard me talk about it, I mean, the book is not designed to be, a long read. It's designed to be, you know, 120, certainly less than 150 pages. And it would be something that for those of you that have been on active duty, you could put in your cargo pocket. So it would be like 5 inches wide by 7 inches tall. If you're familiar with Soldiers Load and Mobility of a Nation or FMFM1 or MCDP1, you know, those kind of short books. And so the idea behind that is people are going to look at it and go, oh, I could knock that out, that it wouldn't be something intimidating. And then the other thing I want to produce, you know, is a audio version of that. And in the audio version, there'll be links to, you know, instead of alluding to something, you can play it, which I think, you know, which makes it more vibrant. So, so I find that exciting as well.
Yeah, man. So, so we're off. We're off and running. And this is not the reason I worked on that all weekend long is because this is fun. This is writing I enjoy, and this is something I obviously believe in. So, I appreciate you taking me under your wing here and letting me fiddle around with your baby.
Well, I think out of all of us, you've done the most writing. I mean, clearly. Probably.
I'm not. It sure took me a long time to get any good at it. That's for sure.
Well, I don't know. There are probably people that are natural writers, but yeah. Let me just tell you. I thought I was a good writer, and I was I went to Catholic schools, and you know they don't mess around. I mean, you perform or you don't do well. And so I thought I was okay at writing. And then when we were at Quantico, I sat down to write an article for the Marine Corps Gazette. And it was the Why Doesn't First Fire Team Rush article that is still used at the Infantry Officer Course, which makes me happy. It's hanging in the CP of, I want to say, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, somebody came and got
you. A 1-4? Did you serve in 1-4?
Never. No, it's hanging on the wall. So no, somebody came and got me one day, and then they said this: I shouldn't show this shit to you, but come on, you got to see this. And I said, what? And they're like, come here. So this is when I was with RCT1, right? So we go walking. It might have been General Furness, and we go walking, and he goes, "Look at this." And there's the article that I wrote in 1993. Hanging on the wall of the battalion command post of 1st Battalion, 4th Marines. And I looked at him and I went, boom! Timeless class.
That is cool.
But what happened to me, my experience was this. I sat down to write, and I wasn't a good outliner, and I would essentially construct Stewart's ride around McClellan. And this is, you know, I wanted to go here, but I would... And I didn't understand the structure, and it took me a long time to learn the structure of writing and how to do it and giving it to somebody and then say, okay, give me the essential idea in this, and then telling you something completely different. And you're like, shit. And then going back and learning how to do it simply and directly, right? And so that it makes sense to people. It makes sense to, you know, 90% of the people are going to tell you that, yeah, this is a central idea. But it was hard for me, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I had a similar experience in Quantico at AWS. Me and Paul Kennedy and an F-18 guy named Spike Sullivan got pulled out by the CG to write what was the draft of FMFM1. General Kulak wanted us to do that. Now what we wrote was good, but it wasn't in FMFM1. None of it was. But what would happen is he would sit through and he'd go through every sentence. Who wrote this? Give me the footnotes and give me the structure and whatnot. And I had a few good things in there that I knew came out of greeting cards. I swear to God, I remembered one. And when he focused on this one, I told him I couldn't remember exactly the source. He was apoplectic. And then he started, where's your outline? And he started making us do that before we come and waste his time on a, you know, on a Friday afternoon. But that was a 3-month project, bro, and that hurt. That was painful.
Well, I will tell you this. I wouldn't even look at something that somebody was going to do for me before I looked at their outline. And that's what I told my kids. I said, look, do not waste your time writing, right, until you have an outline. Because what the outline does is it's the map of what you're going to write. Hanging meat on that is not difficult, right? But getting to the map, that's the hard part. So,
it is. And these days, as a matter of fact, I'm just sitting here clicking on I'm looking for it. There's several programs that you can use to outline your books, and you can move around stuff in them. And I'll actually start constructing what I did and send that to you here when I can find the dumb program. I can't see it right now. But yeah, I learned through bitter experience how to do it, and I still don't do it effectively. I'll start dumping like I did this weekend and go back and then outline and then start bringing some discipline into the word salad. Cause I'm a good word salad writer. I can dump some bullshit, man. I gotta go through and clean it all out. It's a long, tedious process.
All right. Well, first of all, I appreciate your help. And, I think I'm excited about it. And what I'm most excited about is the impact that I believe that post-traumatic winning is going to have. And I saw in one of the Gladwell interviews, one of the things he said was, you know, if you want to do this, you got to write, you got to produce, you have to have content that people can look at and can debate, and you got to get your idea out there. And so that, along with something else I heard him say, which is actually somebody he was interviewing, it was a guy who wrote The Blind Side.
That was another really cool book. Yeah. I don't remember his name though.
And he said, well, the first thing I had to get over was I had to get over, trying to write, the perfect book. And once I did that, then I tend to be okay.
Mm.
And, the guy's name is Michael Lewis.
Uh-huh.
And he's written a book called one was called The Short Sell, The Great Short, or something like that, about mm-hmm. Wall Street and how Wall Street's rigged. And he's written some really he wrote Moneyball about baseball and analytics and he's the one that said that. Once I get over, you know, trying to write the perfect book, then I tend to be all right. And so. Anyway, so
hey, one thing before you go, I do believe out of the two of us, one of us is going to be meeting Malcolm Gladwell. Is that true?
I'm not sure. Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed, but maybe.
That would be cool. That would be cool. I wish you. I'll be jealous, but that would be so cool to hear about.
Yeah. All right, bud. I will talk to you. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm here. Tim Lynch. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Alex Holling's going to join us. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.